Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help, and you can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right, a real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discovery.com/creditcard. Hey, everybody. I am excited to announce that There Are No Girls on the Internet will be back with a brand new season on May 16th. And an even more exciting news, There Are No Girls on the Internet is a finalist for a Shorty Award for Best Technology in Science Podcast. And y'all, I am so thrilled about it. So can you do me a huge favor and vote for us to win? Just go to tangodi.com/vote or use the link in our show description. It only takes a moment, I promise, and you can vote every day until April 26th. Just go to tangodi.com/vote. That's tangoti.com/vote or use the link in our show description. It would really mean a lot to me. There Are No Girls on the Internet is a production of iHeartRadio and Unboss Creative. I'm Bridget Todd, and this is There Are No Girls on the Internet. So if you've been listening to There Are No Girls on the Internet for a while, then you probably know that I have been on the Internet for a very long time. And I joined the podcast Main Accounts, the story of MySpace, to talk about the early days of one of my favorite ever social media platforms. You guessed it, MySpace, and why it was such a huge part of my online upbringing and development. And it was really fun to take a nostalgic, sometimes cringy, digital walk down memory lane. So take a listen, and don't forget to vote for us to win a Shorty Award.
This is an iHeart Original.
If the beginning of Tila Tequila being on my radar as this, like, you know, MySpace influencer for being a queer woman of color, if that was, like, the promise of the internet, the day that I saw that image of her in my hometown in D.C. doing a Nazi salute at a restaurant with a bunch of alt-right dirtbags, that was the nail in the coffin. And so I feel like that moment for me really crystallized where we started and, unfortunately, where we wound up.
I'm Joanne McNeil. And this is Main Accounts, the story of MySpace. Episode 3, MySpace Famous. In this episode, we're going to discuss how MySpace, like reality TV, became a vehicle for celebrity. The people who became famous through the platform gave way to the culture of influencers. MySpace felt like a party. I've heard a few people make this comparison when I've talked about the platform with them recently. Julia Angwin said it in the first episode of our series.
MySpace was definitely a party atmosphere.
And my friend Dorothy Santos said it too, when we were reminiscing about it the other day.
So I wasn't really seeing MySpace as a professional platform, I saw it as this kind of digital party that just would, I could pop in anytime.
Well, what's something people usually want to know about a party before they show up? Who is going to be there? The answer was Tila Tequila.
What's up, everybody? It's your girl, Miss Tila, also known as Tila Tequila.
Tila was the party. Before MySpace, Tila was a model in Playboy and car shows. In 2003, she appeared on Surviving Nugent, a reality show on VH1, hosted by Ted Nugent on his Texas ranch.
My ranch.
I can't handle this.
My rules.
Tila, lazy.
But it was social media that made Tila famous.
The very first MySpace kind of influencer celebrity that I was very, very interested in, and like, she was on my top eight, and it was this person, Tila Tequila. When I think about like who was the first MySpace big account, it was her.
That's Bridget Todd, host of the podcast There Are No Girls on the Internet. On MySpace way back when, Bridget was one of Tila's hundreds of thousands of fans.
One of like the notable things about her is that she was openly queer. And, you know, I'm queer and she's a person of color. I'm a person of color. And I remember thinking like, wow, how cool, like this famous person of color, you know, has a platform around the fact that she's queer.
Tila, the daughter of Vietnamese immigrants, was no heiress like Paris Hilton. Her parents didn't have a lot of money. She had to hustle to get her name out in the world. The internet was part of that hustle.
I have an addiction. My therapist, yes, I have a therapist. I do get help, okay. So my therapist says that I have a highly addictive personality. And, you know, I do. So it's, I'm addicted to the internet. So I'm always tweeting, I'm online, I'm chatting with fans, I do this, do that, and I'm addicted to shopping, I'm addicted to sex, you know, whatever.
This is how people came to know Tila Tequila. She sent friend requests to hundreds and hundreds of people. First, she did this on Friendster. And Tila ran into some trouble doing this because Friendster, compared to MySpace, did not feel like a party. Friendster was pretty rigid about rules. In the summer of 2003, Friendster started cracking down on accounts known as fakesters, accounts that represented anything other than a user's real identity. So you might have seen a Marilyn Monroe fakester. That was a user impersonating Marilyn Monroe on Friendster. Or you might have come across a snowy owl fakester. And people obsessed with birdwatching would have friended that account. The fakesters became sort of like community pages. But Friendster founder Jonathan Abrams hated them. He hired a bunch of moderators to remove them all. A group of these outlaw fakesters came together and wrote an open letter protesting Friendster's policy. The ringleader was someone who went by Roy Batty on Friendster. You know, like the replicant in Blade Runner.
The corporate masters at Friendster should be thrilled that they have such a vibrant online community as they now have on their hands. What they forget is that a living community, by definition, has a life of its own. Deleting the photos and/or entire accounts of fakesters is going to rudely, terribly backfire against the management of this site and will ultimately take the entire community, real or parodied, down with it. The rumblings of dissent are already growing, getting louder by the minute. If Friendster wants to see all of the goodwill and excellent word of mouth it has generated go down in scorching, smoking, very public flames, then they can go right ahead with their little extermination campaign. The internet is a big place, and we can easily take our party somewhere else. To a site where we are not only tolerated, but enthusiastically embraced.
You know where they took that party. MySpace. I mean, of course the fakesters went to MySpace. Friendster was so aggressive about kicking out fakesters that it impacted people using their real identities on the platform too. This happened to Tila Tequila. She kept getting kicked off Friendster for adding too many friends. Tila knew about MySpace because Tom Anderson had been an offline acquaintance. He sent her a bunch of invites to join MySpace, but she declined. It wasn't cool in Tila's mind. MySpace wasn't a party yet. The site had just launched, and no one was really on MySpace yet, except for eUniverse staff and their immediate friends. Still, it was a hassle dealing with Friendster mods. Each time Tila's account was deleted from Friendster, she'd have to rebuild her list of friends manually, add all of her friends again. And in September 2003, when Tila got kicked off Friendster for the fifth time, she'd had enough. Tila finally took Tom up on his offer. And Tila didn't just sign up for MySpace. She invited everyone she knew on Friendster to join her there. At this point, after months of strategies to evade Friendster mods, she had tens of thousands of friends on Friendster. MySpace exploded with thousands of new users. By 2006, Tila had over a million MySpace friends. It's possible MySpace never would have taken off without Tila. If she had declined Tom's invitation, social media history might have gone another way. And without MySpace, we probably never would have heard about Tila Tequila. Tila was a new kind of star, someone who became famous because of the internet. Sure, on MySpace, you called each other friends, but what Tila and many other internet celebrities were collecting were really just fans.
Something about her really represents the sort of duality of all of our internet experiences.
And what happened next in Tila's career feels representative of how social media itself has changed.
I think about her all the time. It's just such an interesting case study for what social media and the internet can do to people. On the one hand, it can be this like fabulous way to connect and to like see yourself and be seen and build a platform around that. On the other hand, it can be so dark. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here, and that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small, no problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS.
You had these people that kind of became known from MySpace and from this particular scene and had a very like definitive aesthetic and sort of cults around them.
That's Taylor Lorenz, a technology reporter at the Washington Post.
Those people today would be just regular influencers.
What actually is an influencer when we use that word? What are we talking about?
I think of it as somebody who creates content and sort of monetizes that content through social platforms or builds an audience through social platforms. They're almost independent media companies where they're people that have a lot of times developed an audience for around their own personality, but it can also be around a certain interest or style or whatever. And then they monetize that online audience. Basically, I guess someone who builds and then monetizes an online audience.
Taylor makes an interesting distinction. People figured out how to get famous on MySpace, but it wasn't exactly a business. Not like what you see with internet celebrities on Twitch or YouTube or Instagram these days.
MySpace was pretty like embedded in sort of the music industry, not quite the way TikTok is now, but it, you know, music was a strong culture of MySpace. And so you had a lot of people growing audiences on the platform and using that to get a record deal, you know, or sell out shows or promote themselves. And then you kind of had these more like individual figures that I think seem like kind of like party type of people. And then you, of course, had celebrities using it as well, like, you know, Katy Perry, again, because it was sort of like music adjacent. And Jeffree Star started in music.
Jeffree Star, like Tila Tequila, was another larger-than-life MySpace superstar. He had an iconic look, MAC makeup, hot pink hair, a look that you could instantly identify in a thumbnail profile picture. He got famous for creating drama and feuding with other MySpace celebrities. But to be honest, Jeffree Star's deal, I don't get it.
Hello? Hey God, it's Jeffree Star. Yeah, well if anyone fucks with me, they're gonna die. Okay, love you too, bye.
Why does someone follow a person like Jeffree Star? Like what do the users who follow the page of a celebrity on MySpace get from that interaction?
Well, a lot of it was like aspiration around kind of like emo culture or like aesthetics. It was like people with a certain aesthetic, and you would follow these people because they were like a lot of modern day influencers or content creators. They were kind of aspirational figures for that era where they were kind of leading this cool party girl lifestyle, or they had like, you know, awesome tattoos and makeup and this aesthetic that people really gravitated to.
On MySpace, people could advertise themselves. Users would post comments like, thanks for the ad, when someone added them as friends. The visibility was, in a way, its own reward. Jeffree Star could get gigs for his band through MySpace. Tila Tequila found modeling and acting opportunities through it. But this happened informally. And mind you, most people on MySpace were not trying to be Tila or Jeffree.
MySpace was never really like pushing you to like become a creator. You mostly just like looked at other people's pages. The stakes were so low for the average user, and nothing on the internet feels that way now.
And if you did become famous on MySpace, it wasn't entirely clear what that would even bring you.
I never had a strategy because there was no such thing as being an influencer back then. So like I literally was just posting my life and I guess people enjoyed it. So then I kind of built a following.
That's Hannah Beth. She wasn't an influencer, but she was definitely MySpace famous.
I never had like a plan where I was like, oh yeah, like I'm going to do this. And like, that's how I'm going to get followers. I literally just did it because I was having fun. And then a following grew from that. And people seemed to enjoy to watch me and my friends kind of live our lives. So
Hannah Beth was in high school in Southern California, where she ran in similar circles with Jeffree Star. They were in each other's top eight. Hannah Beth had an offbeat fashion sense, which came through in the pictures she posted to MySpace.
When I like first started on MySpace, when I was probably like around 15 or so, I was very into like kind of like a vintage like punk look. I was listening to a lot of like late 70s punk bands. I cut my hair really short. And I just like, it was kind of like a vintage punk goth look that I was going with. But I'd wear like all these like wild like vintage clothing, like a vintage wedding dress or something crazy.
Hundreds of thousands of people visited her page just to look at her.
And then it kind of went from that to like, as I was getting older and kind of finding like who I was, the whole kind of like scene kid thing was starting. And I had made friends with a few other girls that were also kind of like MySpace people. And I guess we started the whole kind of scene girl look or vibe. And then that was just, that took off. I mean, I like look at the photos now and like I feel like it looks ridiculous, but like back then, like I don't know, we thought we looked like so cool.
MySpace became a huge part of Hannah Beth's daily life. She even traveled across the country to meet friends she met on MySpace.
I think I was like 15 or 16. I met this girl who lived in Minnesota and like she had messaged me because I always wore like these like glue-in extensions because that was a big thing back then, which was horrible for your hair. And she was like, yeah, look, I'd love it if like you did my extensions. And I was like, yeah, for sure. So my dad like got me a ticket to Minnesota, flew out to meet this random girl. I ended up staying with her for like a week or like maybe 2 weeks even. And I made all of these friends in Minnesota. I like met someone else that I knew from MySpace. And it was like such a fun and awesome time. So I feel like MySpace could kind of bring you together like that. Like I feel like now there's maybe like more danger going on the internet. But back then, maybe because it was so new, I'm sure there was danger there as well. I don't know. Everyone was kind of like in this scene and everyone kind of knew everyone, or there was just some kind of like you felt more safe just meeting up with random people.
Part of what drew her to connect to people online, even travel across the country to meet people, was that her offline life could be rough. On MySpace, Hannah Beth was glamorous, a scene queen. At her high school, people made fun of her for dressing the way she did.
At that time in my life, I was like getting bullied really bad. I was dealing with like self-harm and I was just like very depressed and all of that. And I was very open about all of my struggles through like my blogging and my writing. So the people I was connecting with knew like the real me. And I feel like that's why I was so drawn to it. I just started like posting like things I liked and then people like that as well. And I love being able to like express my fashion through MySpace because I feel like I got bullied a lot for like how I looked and my style. And then on MySpace, people like loved how I looked up to me and like loved my style. So it was like a whole different thing for me because I was like, I'm such a loser at school. And then when I'm like online, I was becoming this like MySpace girl. I don't know. It was a trip.
With the attention she garnered from MySpace, Hannah Beth built a career, first as a blogger with BuzzNet and later working in fashion, including a spot on the reality TV show House of DVF, a competition to become a brand ambassador for Diane von Furstenberg. Hannah Beth won. Hannah Beth was never Kardashian-style famous, but people paid attention to her in a way that didn't really happen to ordinary people before the internet.
There were blogs dedicated to MySpace stars, and these people were kind of covered in other internet like sub-communities and forums, places like Sticky Drama.
But for other MySpace celebrities, the internet was a double-edged sword. They faced harassment online, where they built their fate.
people would set up blogs about MySpace stars, and they would sort of speculate on different things. They would try and find information on these people, and a lot of the comment section would be other fans, and they would kind of all... Sometimes it was really positive, and then obviously some of it turned extremely dark, where you had kind of the worst of internet comment culture attacking these people, and they had stalkers and, you know, harassment and safety problems.
Unlike movie stars, the MySpace famous probably didn't have the money to hire bodyguards. They didn't have representation, agents, managers, invested in their career longevity. And it all came at the cost of privacy.
All of that stuff was so niche and so misunderstood at the time. Like, now we have this concept of online safety. There wasn't that in the 2000s. So, you know, a lot of women were kind of like building audiences, getting micro fame, and had this like dedicated group of people on the internet that was obsessed with them. But there wasn't like, there weren't really like guardrails around any of it. They were almost like too accessible to their fandoms. Like, now there's this like, you think of influencers as celebrities, so you kind of almost respect them a little bit more. Whereas back then, I think MySpace stars felt almost like too much like they were too kind of on the level of normal people almost. And so like average people just felt entitled to be horrible to them.
The visibility that users like Tila Tequila could attain on MySpace was like a hyper-popularity. Think the most popular kid at high school times 1,000. And in some ways, it could be more invasive than a traditional celebrity experience. Because MySpace, like every social network, was designed for looking at others, surveilling others. People clicked on other people's profiles and assessed them from a distance.
And there was no blueprint for it. Like, there was no understanding of online fame at that point. So people I think had less boundaries. And then also, you know, the mid-2000s was kind of like peak reality fame and kind of like this really toxic type of celebrity. Like, that was like that whole Britney, Paris, Lindsay era, where it was like this culture of excess.
Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS.
Tired of hair removal tools that just don't cut it? Conair Girl Bomb gives you smooth, flawless results while putting you firmly in control. From achieving that silky smooth skin to boosting your inner confidence, Conair Girl Bomb is all about helping you elevate your self-care game. Whether it's creating a hype playlist, throwing yourself into a hobby, or scheduling some me time, self-care is important to keeping you feeling confident and empowered. It's time to take your hair removal routine to the next level. You can trust Conair Girl Bomb to get the job done right. Conair Girl Bomb gives you the secret weapons for achieving powerful results with ease. Designed with women in mind, these tools boast the Sassy Girl Bomb Grip for unparalleled handling and precision, along with professional-grade blades to deliver results that you used to only get from men's tools. No more compromising. So, to all you incredible women out there, treat yourself to a little Conair Girl Bomb magic. Don't settle for anything less than perfection. Elevate your grooming game with Conair Girl Bomb. Available now at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
No other form of entertainment defines the aughts like reality television. Survivor and Big Brother both debuted in 2000, and shows like The Bachelor, The Osbournes, and American Idol arrived shortly after. These programs could be made cheaply. New software had just made it easier to edit down large quantities of video footage. Producers didn't have to hire professional actors or screenwriters. It's no coincidence that the reality TV boom happened while the Screen Actors Guild, and later the Writers Guild, were negotiating streaming royalties. With reality TV, celebrities projected the illusion of living ordinary lives, while ordinary people projected the illusion of celebrity. It was a lot like the immediacy and intimacy that early online celebrities like Tila Tequila offered their friends on MySpace. Tom Anderson even said in an interview once, he thought of MySpace as the reality TV of the internet. It felt inevitable then that Tila Tequila would leverage her online popularity with a reality show of her own. In 2007, A Shot at Love debuted.
Tila!
Tila Tequila began her quest for love.
I'm a bisexual.
Oh.
This season on A Shot at Love.
It was the first reality dating show featuring a bisexual person.
She got a reality show on MTV called Shot at Love with Tila Tequila. And the conceit was that, you know, she's a queer girl looking for love, and that the house was going to be filled with both women and men because she's queer. Me and my friends, like my queer circle of friends, when I say that we watched this show religiously, like we had parties, like we thought it was so earnest.
It was one of MTV's biggest releases that year and ran for a couple seasons. Tila appeared to be doing really well in the late aughts. She made music and published a book. And she made some savvy business decisions to monetize her fame. Working with Joe Francis, he of the Girls Gone Wild franchise, she set up a website called Tila's Hotspot, where she had a blog and webcam, and basically posted the kind of content she had on MySpace, but on a website of her own. Tila even appeared to be settling down. In 2009, she was engaged to Casey Johnson, the Johnson & Johnson heiress. But then tragedy struck.
She was young, beautiful, and an heiress to an empire. Now Casey Johnson's sudden death has many asking how and why.
At the end of 2009 and the beginning of 2010 was very hard for me. And as you can tell, during those times, I made lots of headlines of meltdowns and, you know, that was my way of, like, when you lose someone, and I didn't know how to cope.
Casey died of diabetes complications. It was only a month after they announced their engagement. Things went downhill from there. In 2012, Tila was hospitalized after a drug overdose and a brain aneurysm. It had been a suicide attempt. In 2015, Tila prepared a comeback and joined the cast of Celebrity Big Brother. Then post-resurface of Tila 2 years earlier in 2013, defending Hitler on her blog and posing in Nazi regalia. She was kicked out of the house because of it. Tila apologized. Tila called it a terrible mistake in a statement posted to social media. She mentioned her suicide attempt and said she suffered from severe depression and addiction. In her words, "I felt worthless and unloved as that pain continued to grow, causing me to further spiral out of control." And then she reiterated that she is absolutely 100% not a Nazi supporter. Tila's apology sounded heartfelt, and maybe it was. But 2 months later, Tila posted a photo of her baby daughter with a Hitler mustache. And for Bridget, who had followed Tila's career for over a decade by that point, it was heartbreaking.
And I remember watching her trajectory from being this person that I loved and really admired as like a queer woman of color, watching her go from someone who, like, that was her thing in my mind, to the way that now she basically was like radicalized on the internet and via the alt-right.
In 2016, Tila was photographed giving a Nazi salute at a conference with white nationalists in Washington, D.C.
If the beginning of Tila Tequila being on my radar as this like MySpace influencer for being a queer woman of color, if that was like the promise of the internet, the day that I saw that image of her in my hometown in D.C. doing a Nazi salute at a restaurant with a bunch of alt-right dirtbags, that was the nail in the coffin. And so I feel like that moment for me really crystallized where we started and unfortunately where we wound up. But those early days were so full of promise. And then I that picture is like burned in my mind of, because of platforms like MySpace, this was a person who allowed me to see part of myself that I was still getting comfortable with. And then where we wound up was so dark and so sad and so heavy.
For others, fame on MySpace came as easily as it went.
You had people like Tila Tequila go on to become a reality star because that was the only kind of attainable access to quote unquote like mainstream fame in the 2000s was like reality shows. But even then, like going on a reality show doesn't mean that you yourself profit very much. So I think all the people from that era kind of fell off and never really were able to capture the true value of the brand that they built back then.
A few MySpace celebrities dropped out of the public eye by choice, including Hannah Beth.
I think just like as I got older, I just started to enjoy like having like my privacy a bit more now. And I just don't love social media like how I used to love it. So it's just like, it's not one of my like top priorities.
But for others who became famous on MySpace, those years were less than idyllic.
It was a horrible time to be famous. Like, it was so toxic and so bad. Tabloid culture ruled. It was really playing out on the internet in small scale through blogs. And so I think a lot of MySpace stars just kind of like got chewed up by that system. And you see them now like into crystal healing, or they've totally reinvented themselves, or they're like super offline. Or you have people like Jeffrey, who just leaned 150% into it and kind of became this like internet villain because he literally thrived in that type of toxicity.
The blowback to visibility online that Taylor describes wasn't only impacting people like Tila with hundreds of thousands of friends on social media. People with small followings and relatively ordinary lives faced harassment and bullying on a social network that had quickly become the center of their social life. More on this in the next episode of Main Accounts. Thanks for listening to Main Accounts, the story of MySpace, an iHeart original podcast. Main Accounts, the story of MySpace, is written and hosted by me, Joanne McNeil. Editing and sound design by Mike Coscarelli and Mary Du. Original music by Elise McCoy. Mixing and mastering by Josh Fisher. Research and fact-checking by Austin Thompson, Jocelyn Sears, and Marissa Brown. Show logo by Lucy Quintanilla. Special thanks to Ryan Murdoch, Grace Views, and Bahid Frazier. Our associate producer is Lauren Phillip. Our senior producer is Mike Coscarelli. And our executive producer is Jason English. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Sadly, my MySpace page is no longer around, but you can find me on Twitter @JoeMick. Let us hear your MySpace story. And check out my book, Lurking. Main Accounts, The Story of MySpace, is a production of iHeart Podcasts.
Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at conairgirlbomb.com or a retailer near you.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.